This is Unpacking Design, a podcast to help designers of all kinds better themselves in career, business, and life. Join me, Mike LaValle, and my co-host, Tim Ong, as we unpack the problems designers face every day. Welcome to Season 2 of Unpacking Design, Life Lessons to My Younger Self. Each episode this season is a raw and unfiltered dive into what we wish we knew years ago. Since we can't turn back the clocks for ourselves, we hope that these masterclass discussions will help you on your own journey. Enjoy.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome back to Unpacking Design. This is the fourth episode in a 12-part series that Mike and I are calling Life Lessons to My Younger Self, where Mike and I will each be sharing six lessons that we've learned in our lives and careers so far. In a previous lesson, Mike talked about practicing mattering more than the result. Make sure you check out all of the previous lessons in a series to get the most out of it. Today, we're going to be talking about the fourth lesson, which is finding your voice. This is a topic that I recently started to think more about because I've been using a platform called Clubhouse, and I've also been YouTubing for a year now. The reason why I want to talk about finding your voice today is because whenever I think about the things that I'm hearing people saying, the things that I'm seeing people sharing on social media, and all of the stuff that we're being bombarded by on the internet, I find that 99% of that information is surface level. That a majority of the people who are trying to teach, trying to be a coach, trying to be a mentor, and trying to influence others are, generally speaking, copying what someone else has said and just saying it. For example, there's someone that Mike and I both follow. His name is Chris Doe. And when he goes out and talks about mindset and thinking for creative professionals and designers, you leave that room and you see that people who are in the audience might start a room and start talking about a similar topic, repeating what was just said, but claiming it as their own. And it led me to thinking about this idea of finding your voice. What does it actually mean to be authentic? Everyone is using that term, and no one is actually diving deep and talking about what authenticity truly means. So today, the lesson I would teach to my younger self is to take the time to find my voice. What I mean by that is to take the time to figure out what my position on subject matters that matter to me really is. Most people don't have a position. So let's jump right into this lesson today. The first part of this, in this mini lesson, is the most important and critical part. It's to read, research, and educate yourself. Everything starts there. The first and critical step of finding your voice is to educate yourself by reading and researching. We have to go beyond the social media posts and the newspaper articles in search of a publication that objectively explains the ideas that we're trying to learn. It's important to ask questions along the way and to search for the answers to those questions as you read and listen to the educational materials. These questions are actually the beginning of your opinions on the subject matter, and it provides you with a basis to start future discussions and join conversations on the subject. The reason why this whole part about educating yourself is important is because when you're trying to find your voice, you need to have objective information in front of you. You need to take the time to go out and find all of the facts that you can about the thing that you're about to embark on and talk about and share with the world. If you don't take the time to actually dive deep and understand the beginnings or the philosophical parts of any subject matter, then when you speak, you're speaking with very little clarity and you're essentially repeating what someone else has said, which implies that you are playing a game of telephone. And when you play a game of telephone, the information that you're sharing could be wrong. And the worst moment would be if you were live in front of millions of people and someone called you out. Because if someone actually knows the answers to what you're saying and they see through the falseness of everything you're saying and they point it out live and you can't rebuttal or actually hold an intellectual debate on something of value to you, people will see you as an imposter, which is the reason why everyone feels imposter syndrome, because they haven't taken the step to educate themselves enough on a subject matter to then go out and speak about it. I know that it sounds very mean to say it that way, but we're in a society where everyone is pushing ideas, but they have no basis. When you start to have a position through the research that you've done, you start to have a basis for the things that you're saying, and you start to have backing to your beliefs. It doesn't mean that you're out there to yell at someone who disagrees with you, but instead, it allows you to embark on a journey of consistent learning and to better your ideas and invite people to have open discourse about it and to continue helping you develop a position, whether or not you are right or wrong. So I'm curious to know what you think about that, Mike, this idea that if you want to find your voice, you have to read, research, and educate yourself first before you embark on this journey of sharing the ideas through social media, through any of the conferences that you want to go to, and anything else. What do you think about that, Mike?
Yeah, it's a fascinating topic, and I'm glad that this is sort of the starting point. It reminds me of a concept in computer science that you may or may not be aware of, Tim, but it's called garbage in, garbage out. And the idea is that if you put raw data into a computer system that has to calculate whatever, you know, after the fact, that it is only going to give you garbage information after the things that you put into the conversation. And this applies now to what we're talking about with our voice. The things that you bring to the conversation are going to, in terms of what you've learned already to give yourself that platform, to give yourself the position that you're talking about, if it comes from a place of garbage, you're not going to be able to accurately convey, I think, a well thought out idea. So that's one problem I see, is that if you're not doing the due diligence, like you were talking about, where you are ultimately, you know, we're each of us is ultimately in charge of what we learn throughout the day, how we pursue different pieces of knowledge, and the sources that we get those pieces of knowledge from. I can for sure see on one side of the coin that people are very community-based. So, for example, you might see somebody who is quote unquote more liberal getting their source of information from, I don't know, Washington Post, or you might see somebody who is more conservative getting them from somewhere else, right? That doesn't necessarily always mean that the information is accurate objectively on either source. And I think to, one, vary the types of places that we get the information from, and then also ask those questions after the fact to then shape, mold, position our own opinions, I think is a very important step that most people don't do. And it's not just about straight knowledge. It's about the type of ideas that we take in every day. It's the type of shows we watch. It's the type of content that we experience. It's the types of podcasts we listen to. It's the types of newspapers we read. And for me, I think that I'm trying to be as objective as possible, but I know that I'm not 100% objective. And I struggle with that all the time of, am I really just regurgitating what somebody else is regurgitating, which somebody else is regurgitating? And then it becomes this telephone. I think that was like the perfect example of what I could think of when we're talking about this that you brought up, is it is like playing telephone sometimes, where the original idea might come from, say, talk about somebody like a Simon Sinek, you know, where he is taking an idea that is even then the idea of this infinite game that he recently wrote a book about is actually somebody else's idea. But the difference between him just saying that it's his idea is, and not citing it, is that he does cite where the ideas came from. And you can see that lineage of where that comes from. And then he's admitting that he's building on that original idea that somebody else came up from or came up with, and taking that and evolving the idea so that it's now Simon Sinek's idea and not just the original creator's idea. And I think that that is a very, at least for me, is a very clear way of understanding that you can't just spout out an idea without filtering it through your own thoughts first, because one, if it's very easy today to sort of recognize when somebody's, I want to say borrowed, but sometimes it's just blatantly stolen an idea from somebody else. It's very easy to know that. And it's even easier when the idea is inherently flawed from the beginning. I remember there were a couple times that you've mentioned before where on Clubhouse, specifically as an app, there's no place to hide, right? There's no place to find cover. You're live in a meeting, essentially in a room with other people talking about an idea. And if you haven't really come to the table having fully fleshed out that idea for yourself, and you're blatantly wrong about it, going back to garbage in, garbage out, you're spewing the wrong information to other people. And I think it becomes complicated more so in frameworks like that, because whenever we're talking about things in social media, if you spew out something on Twitter, it's possible that no one will ever know. Right. But you feel good because you've put it out there and you've told people what your idea is. And I think that's very dangerous in terms of finding this voice, finding the position, because you don't get that necessarily same immediate feedback that you might when you're in a live room with somebody else. And I don't know if you want to go in that direction with this, but I just find that this topic is super interesting, as you can imagine from me rambling here a little bit.
Yeah. So for me, the reason why I bring up the part about reading, researching, and educating yourself isn't because the goal of it is for you to have an objective way of speaking at the end. It's more that we as designers and creative people in general have so many opinions and ideas that shape our world. But the issues that we run into is that we don't have enough information to now apply our experiences as a creative person to. If we can start to read, research, and educate ourselves with more information on the subject matters that we truly care about, we can now apply the experiences that we have in our life and in our career to those things and start to form the ways that we see the world and share it. Because when we start talking to people in a discussion, we don't cite just one book. We don't just share ideas from one person. We actually compile and combine all of these things that we've seen and read and researched. And we have a comprehensive way of speaking about a subject. So when someone rebuttals, then you can actually come out and ask a good question and dive a little bit deeper and continue to learn and form your position or disagree and offer a different perspective. When you don't have a perspective, you don't have something worth sharing, because you're only sharing the perspective of someone else that you've heard, and that someone else heard it from someone else, which heard it from someone else. So the other part of it is that I was in a discussion recently about this idea of imposter syndrome and this other idea of speaking confidently. That was the subject matter. The people in the room had a bunch of other people who were interested in learning about how to speak confidently. So as you would imagine, these people are on stage discussing the matter, and the people are asking for advice. All the people on stage were saying, hey, if you want to speak confidently, you just need to hype yourself up first. And that's not exactly what they're saying, but that was the idea that they were sharing. That if you want to get over imposter syndrome, and if you want to share any ideas confidently on any stage or platform, you just need to show up and do it. You need to hype yourself up, right? Like you need to be like Eminem in 8 Mile, like in the bathroom, about to go out and perform. And then you go out and you kill it, right? And so they're hyping these people up who are on stage. They're like, yeah, you know, it's like this woman, this is a great example. She was developing a new brand around an idea that she had. I'm not going to share the woman's name or the brand because that's beside the point. But she had very little information about it. She just knows that she wanted to, let's say, get into something with soap, right? She wants to sell soap. Well, she doesn't really know how to get a scent for the soap. She doesn't know what scent actually sells. She doesn't know what people are actually looking for, but she likes soap. And so now they're pushing her to go out and sell soap, right? Well, just get on stage and talk about soap. Who cares what people think is what they were saying. And when I hear things like that being said in a room, the biggest question in my mind is, well, what is her position? What is it that that person is actually trying to say? And where does that come from? And that's the most important thing that I believe comes with finding your voice. That you can hype anyone up to get on stage to talk about anything. But when they're up there and they have no clout, then why are they speaking? And that is the question that everyone in the room will be asking. Why are you speaking about something? What is it that makes you the expert in this thing? What is it that brings that you bring to the table that I should be listening to and believing? And that's where the whole idea of reading, researching, and educating yourself really comes in, because you need to have that knowledge behind you in order to actually speak about something and have the clout that you need in order to actually tell someone about an idea. Because if you don't have that and you're trying to push an idea, then I would hope that you had enough experience and trial and error that you would have learned these things through that experience. Most people skip this whole thing of getting the experience because they want the quicker way. And they also skip the research because they don't want to read. So instead, they go to the people who are seen as influencers in their spaces, read what they're posting, listen to what they're saying, watch what they're showing, and they try and regurgitate the information in hopes of writing the coattails of someone else. So to find your voice, it starts by reading, researching, and actually educating yourself on the subject matter. Once you do that, the next mini lesson is to determine your position and to base it off of that research. As we learn more about the ideas that we're interested in becoming an expert in, we inevitably come up with the beginnings of our position on that matter. The more that we objectively know about the issues and ideas, the more opinions we can formulate and share. It gives us the confidence that we need to say what we mean and to mean what we say. It removes the doubts and allows for a proper discussion that goes beyond the surface towards the heart of the matter. It actually begins to position us as a thought leader on the subject. So when you go into any discussion and you hear someone talking, if you can tell that they don't really know too much about what they're saying, and all they're saying is the same thing and speaking in circles, you generally know that it's someone who hasn't done their research or hasn't had the experience to inform what they're saying. So to me, if you are trying to find your voice and you want to get past imposter syndrome, you have to determine your position. The way you determine it is by going through the educational process of reading and researching, asking questions as you're doing it, because your questions actually inform everything that you're learning, because that is the beginning of all of your opinions and solidifying it in your own voice. And when you go out and you start to share it in any way, shape, and form, those are the opinions that will carry to somebody else. So I'm curious what you think about this idea, Mike, about determining your position by basing it off of all the things that you're actually reading and learning and engaging in before you actually jump in and start sharing.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting model that you're sort of proposing. I think the one thing I actually kind of wanted to maybe get your initial feedback on, though, and maybe challenge what we're talking about here, is the path that we are discussing here is very much for the, let's say, the creative, the innovator, the designer, the architect, the whoever who wants to find or share a position that they have, whether that's to become a content creator, whether that's to put your ideas out in the world, shape your ideas, things like that. When we're talking about reading, researching, and educating ourselves, and then asking questions, the one question I actually have for you is, when is it okay for somebody to ask a question in a public forum to find more about that subject, or question things that they're finding in their own research, versus actually putting out a position? And I guess the example would be, if I'm in the middle of writing a book on burnout, right? I'm not a medical doctor. I'm not a psychologist. I don't know everything about the human mind and human body, but I know enough about my own experience to formulate the beginnings of an idea here about the idea of burnout, right? So I can talk to, and I've written about it, and I've formulated some basic ideas, right? But there are things that I'm learning as I go that I don't know the answers to. And I can't always say, yes, this is the way that this should be, or this is the way that should be. And I want to get your thoughts on when you are the student versus the teacher, or the speaker, or the person who's trying to learn versus the person who's directly trying to, quote unquote, educate somebody else.
Yeah, I think we're definitely getting there in the next mini lesson. But the other part to your question, though, is that even with something like what you're doing, which is writing a book on burnout based on your experience of going through burnout, is that you had the experience. You experienced burnout, and as you were experiencing it, you actively sought knowledge to teach yourself about burnout and to get out of it. But you went through that step. You looked into how others got out of it. You started reading about it, and you dug a little bit deeper instead of saying, well, I never experienced burnout, but I know a lot of people like this idea. I know that there are 2 billion people researching the term burnout on Google. So as a trend, I want to talk about it because I want to capture that audience. And to me, the latter is what I'm finding a lot of people doing, that they haven't experienced something. They haven't dug a little bit deeper into it. What they've done is they've seen that people are engaged in a topic, and they want to be involved with that topic to capture that number of people who are interested so that they can begin to grow an audience. And if you're growing an audience without the experience or the knowledge or the foresight, to me, there's going to be a point where you're called out. And when you're called out and you don't have that experience and you can't refer back to your experience and how these other things inform you, the books you've read, the journal articles you've looked into, all of that stuff, then when someone questions you, the only thing you're going to be able to go back on are the things that other people have said on a surface level. And that's where it gets bad. So you should be asking questions all the time. But the moment that you flip from asking the question to giving advice is totally different. Too many people are trying to give advice when they haven't done enough to be able to solidify an advice in any way. Think about it. You go into any discussion, ask a question, and sit there and listen. Before anybody can even say anything, the first thing running through everyone's mind is, someone asked a question. They need help, and I need to give them advice. No one thinks to themselves, am I qualified enough to talk about burnout, right? Should I be talking about anything related to this subject at all? So for example, if someone came up to me and asked me a question about Pixar, I would not feel compelled to answer, right? Because I can't talk about Pixar. I don't generally watch Pixar movies. So if you ask me a question about it, I would be compelled to ask you questions back and to admit to you that I don't know. A lot of people are afraid of not knowing and to admit that. So that's why the question you ask is a great one, because in reality, in order to learn and educate yourself, you have to be asking questions. And that leads to you having to be humble enough to enter a room, enter a discussion, and be able to admit you don't know, but to ask questions to the people who do. People are far too often thinking of themselves as the people with advice. How many people are a life coach who don't actually have the experience that they're teaching? Right? So that's where this whole idea, not only of what you're reading and researching, comes into play, but actually your experiences and how they shape what you're researching, because that's your position. It's your experience tied to the research you've done to elevate it and to form your position. If you don't have experience and you do the research, you'll eventually come up with an idea, but you have to also be practicing that thing so that you understand what's being said.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think the one word that comes to mind that I don't think we've said necessarily yet, but resounds a lot with me as we're discussing this, is imitation. So there's this idea that we are imitating in some ways the people that we admire, right? We are taking from the things that we like to learn about. Maybe it's with all the best intentions, but because I think the thing that you're touching on are all very helpful and valid to somebody who is trying to find their way in the world, right? They're trying to, especially you brought up having no experiences in life yet, but teaching how to, you know, being a life coach. I think of these basically relatively kids at like 22 teaching life skills. And it's kind of one of those things where even just saying that, you might have a lot of experiences at that age that resonate with certain people, but that part of it that's missing, that secret sauce, is that experience where there are people like Tom Bilyeu or Gary Vee who will say, just disappear for 10 years and come back. And after you've had that experience, after you've lived a life, after you've done something, come back, you know, be quiet for a couple of years and then come back to the discussion after you've learned all these things, after you've experienced them, and then teach people about things. There is something that's very raw and very direct about having those experiences. Personally, going back to the burnout thing, I wouldn't be able to even talk about it right now unless I went through it. And to your point, I think it would come off as very false and imitated as a discussion, because for me to just say things that are surface level, yes, they are accurate, but they don't have the resonance behind them when I say them, unless I had that experience. And because I have that experience, it becomes something different. I think that everyone is in some way or another trying to belong. And I think part of the reason why I see people share ideas that sound good, but are not from a core value or a core place inside them, because they don't have that experience, is because we as humans want to belong more. And I don't always think it's malicious the way that that happens, but I think that, to your point, sometimes it comes off as, I would have almost rather that person didn't say something about it, and almost undermine their position by saying something that they didn't either truly believe in or they didn't understand. I think that almost works against you in a lot of ways, where you're trying to belong or position yourself as somebody who knows somebody, but it's almost like taking two steps forward, one step back, or one step forward, two steps back. And it just creates this sort of, honestly, it creates a mentality for me when I'm listening to that person speak again, like, do I really even want to listen to this person again? They don't really know what they're talking about. And I don't mean that in a mean way. I just mean it in a, I don't want to waste my time trying to, it's not even learning at that point. It's like trying to understand somebody's position they don't really have. It's like somebody else's position that's been watered down through this idea of, you know, we were talking about telephone before. I like when you are, in particular, Tim, I like when you are very blunt about things like Pixar. And I like that you brought that up, because for anybody who doesn't know, for a long time on Unpacking Design, we would come to the table with different topics. And the one topic that we never actually talked about was Pixar, because Tim shut it down immediately. I appreciated that from Tim, because we didn't try to jerry-rig this thing together with tape and hopes and dreams. Tim had never seen a Pixar movie in his life at the time. And it helped me just understand, one, a little bit more about where you were coming from, but also it just made the conversation go to a better topic. I can't even remember which topic we ended up picking that day, but it was obviously going to be a much better and thoughtful conversation, which it inevitably was, I think, than to just try to push through and force something. I think positioning yourself based on this experience and based on the things that we're learning is super important. And I didn't know if you have any thoughts on any of the things that I just mentioned.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that I wanted to touch on before we move on to the next mini lesson here is that when you start to identify your own position based on the things that you're reading and the things that you're researching, and to clarify, by researching, it's not about just reading. Researching can also include experimentation by the act of trying to do something, because that's what research is. And so when you have that position based on those things, and you come to the table and you combine these things together, you are more confident about the things you're about to say, how you're going to say it and deliver it, and also you're more apt to say, I don't know the answer to this thing, or everything that's already been said, I agree with, and so let's move on. Too many people are in a society now and in a group, just like you said about belonging, where they feel compelled to agree and to repeat what was just said, but changing five words and wasting the time of everyone else. You might not think that, because everyone loves to speak. But in that moment, when you say and you start with, I agree, and then you go on to say what everyone else just said, instead of saying, I agree, but this is what I think, and sharing a totally different perspective or a different way of taking what was just said and turning it into a very concise way of saying it, now you're on this path of identifying who you are and your voice. But if all you say is, I agree, yeah, you know, Mary said this, and Joe said that, and Billy said this, and you know what? I agree with what all of you said. So if everyone else found value from that, follow me. It just doesn't make sense, right? Because you just said that you agreed with everyone else. Well, what about you? Where is the difference between what you agree with and your own belief? And when you don't have that, but all you are is a yes man or a yes woman, then you're in a place where the only thing you're adding to the table is wasted space. And no one wants to be that person, but it seems like everyone forgets when they're in the moment not to be that person. If you want to be seen differently, you need to start having a position. And so that leads into the next point that I wanted to make. It's the third mini lesson in this series. So far, we talked about reading, researching, and educating yourself, using that to help determine your position, because it's based on all of that research and the reading that you've done. The third mini lesson here is to teach based on experience combined with what you learn through your research. Once we have enough research to position our beliefs and ground it in an objective basis, we need to share the information with others. The more that we know about the subject, the more that we can begin to share it with other people. Oftentimes, we're going to be asked really tough questions from people who might know a little bit more about the ideas that we're discussing, or might actually be looking for help, which is a great opportunity for us to ask questions, open a bigger discussion, and continue learning. It's also a reminder to take notes, be a really good listener, and to return to researching while we're continuing to teach. the whole process of reading, researching, and combining it with your experiences of your life and career is the best way to continue to learn and to teach. You have to keep doing these things over and over and over again in order to get better and better at the things that you're personally pursuing, but the things that you're trying to teach someone else. And in that moment, you also need to be humble enough to know when you don't know the answer to something and to say you don't know. Too many people who are trying to find their voice say things on everything. You don't always need to have the answer. We're in a world where everyone's told you need to know. You need to know, you need to know. You go into a career, the moment you say, I don't know, people think that they're going to be looked down on. Ironically, people who run companies can say that they don't know. And the moment that they admit that they don't know, generally, they're seen to be of higher stature because they admitted something that was hard to admit right away. But when you go into a courtroom where there's millions of dollars at stake, how many people often don't know? Everybody. So when it actually counts, people don't know. But when you feel like you want to contribute, all of a sudden you're the universal world of knowledge. Anything anyone wants to know about, you can answer. So to avoid being the person who's just out there trying to agree and say whatever it is that you want to say, if you want to start positioning yourself and find your true voice, it all comes from taking everything that you're learning through practicing, through your experiences, through reading, through research, going out and teaching it to other people and being open to the discourse that comes out of it. When an expert is talking in the same conference as you, on the same stage as you, in the same room as you, ask questions. Don't try and fight somebody just because you're looking to show how much you know. Have an open discussion about it and learn together. And if you don't have the answer to something, be open and willing to admit that you don't know. Go away when you're done. Read, research, and inform yourself more about the thing that you didn't know. So the next time you come to the table, you now know more about that subject. If it's totally unrelated to what you're about and the things you're trying to be about, and it's unrelated to your personal voice, you don't have to research it, nor do you have to have an answer to it. Because it's not you, right? If I'm on a stage and Mike comes up and asks that Pixar question, I would just say, Mike, I'm sorry, I can't speak about that because I don't watch Pixar movies. I haven't watched one. And if you asked me about it, maybe I have, but I just don't know enough to speak about it. The moment you do that, you've saved so much time for everyone else, and everyone else will respect you for it. Be willing and open to let people know that you don't know the answer to a question. What do you think about that, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, I really do think that you should watch some Pixar movies because they're great. So then we can have a conversation about it and then you'll be informed. But until that time, I think that you know this, Tim, just from experience of sharing ideas with other people as well, is that there's this kind of magic in teaching people when you're really teaching people that happens, that you have to, and this is actually happening for me, honestly, as we do this series, is I have these lessons that I want to tell my younger self. You do as well. And I would imagine that you are, as we do a little bit more research, as we collect our thoughts on each of these ideas, because we're trying to provide a lot of value to the listeners here, we're re-engaging with these ideas that we had thought about, doing more research, thinking about them even more. And that magic happens when you sort of collect all these things together and try to explain an idea to somebody else, right? There's a profound transformation that happens where it goes from not just an idea anymore, but that sort of special way that you are able to convey that to another person. And I think in a lot of ways, when you do it properly, the idea actually becomes stronger because it's not only coming from a place of research and thoughtfulness, but it's also coming from that filter that is you, that is your voice, that is somebody who is able to take that idea and rework it. it's difficult for a lot of people to do that until they've experimented a little bit with it. So part of the process that I see as somebody who, like, I personally find myself to be a mentor and a teacher in my normal day job, but I also find that I just naturally have those tendencies for wanting to share ideas, to wanting to share sort of knowledge and to teach other people. And that's probably above and beyond the average person, if I had to guess. I think everybody wants to have their voice heard, but in my filter through my own voice, I want to express ideas that also transform that other person in a positive way, in a way that I don't take that for granted. I know that if I am transforming somebody else's ideology or somebody's way of thinking, I want to make sure that I'm doing it in the right way so that I'm not just imitating somebody else and playing this game of telephone and essentially going back to the garbage in, garbage out. I don't want somebody to leave the conversation with me or leave that moment with me and not take away something that is at least positive for them and their own growth. The thing that you talked about a little bit that I thought was really helpful is that I actually struggle with this a lot too, is that I don't know everything, and I will try to admit that as often as I can because of the fact that I don't want to transform somebody in the wrong way, right? And I have become better at this over time. It's like this skill that I've adopted over time by practicing. And I hadn't really thought about it in the way that you had mentioned it before, where it's not only helping you to sort of avoid talking about something in a way that is detrimental to somebody, but it's also being respectful of somebody else's time, right? And I think that that is very important today in particular, because we are all very busy. Everybody loves using the word busy for sort of how we structure our lives. And it's respectful of that time that we have to spend, whether it's in a clubhouse room or online or in a conversation and at work, what have you. It's respectful of the other person's time and of how they are interfacing with you in that moment. And I think it's perfectly fine to say, I don't know. It's very scary, I think, though, also to say, I don't know, because you feel inferior and you feel as though you are. The best way I can put it is I feel very confident that I can teach you about certain things, and there's other things I have no idea how to teach you. I am not a car guy, as an example. If somebody started talking about cars or sports, I probably couldn't say much about it other than, yeah, that's a cool looking car, or that's a great time, you know, playing that sport. I can't tell you anything about how to play that sport, but when I try, you know, on my own, it's great. But it's, I'm not as engaged with those topics. So I very rarely will talk, and you know this just because I don't talk about this. I don't talk about those things with you. I don't talk about those things with other people because I don't know that much about them. I might listen in here and there if there's somebody who's talking about somebody who I feel like is an authority, but there are other times where I would just rather somebody not peacock essentially and imitate somebody else's ideas if they don't really know what they're about and not waste my time. I think that's it's a very salient point, and I appreciate the way you put that.
Yeah, and just two things to what you're saying. The first one is this idea of the inferiority complex and how a lot of people experience that, especially when you're in a professional setting where you feel like if you say you don't know, that people are going to look down on you. And I had this boss once who did that. If I ever said, you know, I don't know, they would give me this stern look like, you don't know? And then I would look at them and say, I don't know. And once I started to find humor in it, in the sense that I don't know, but if you're going to keep pressing me on to try and get me to say something, then to me, it becomes a game of will. Are you trying to get me to tell a lie? Or are you trying to get me to say something I'm going to regret? Because I'm not going to. I'd rather know the answer before I say it. And a lot of people have that. So for me to get past that inferiority complex, I had to dig deep within myself. And that's where you find your voice. Because when you dig deep enough and you know, that for you, it's something that you either need to learn or feel the need to learn later and you go and do it, or you find deep within yourself that you don't care, that that thing is a thing you don't care about. And when you know that, that's your position on that subject. So for me, yeah, I might watch a Pixar movie with my fiance in the future, Mike, but in terms of wanting to dive into a deeper discourse about it, I probably won't, because I'm not as into film at this point in my life as maybe you are and others are. But my position on it is there, which leads me to this other idea that there are different types of discussions in life where you can share your voice. One is with your friends and family. That's just your authentic self. That's you. It's everything that you want to talk about, but on a surface level. It's about just saying anything you want to say and enjoying the discussion, right? Being in this surface level place and getting to know people. And it's about spending physical, experiential time together. But when you're at a different type of a discussion where it's about talking about a deeper subject with people looking to learn, that is the part where teaching is important and knowing your true authentic self and your voice and your position is the most important. Because if you don't have any of those, you should not be up there teaching someone something that you don't even know the answer to, which is what you said, Mike. And the other part of it is that I just wanted to touch on this idea of why teaching is important. When you're teaching everything that you know based on your experience, the reading and the research you've done, you have to take all that information and you have to share it, whether it's through your voice, through speaking like what we're doing right now in the podcast, or if it's through film or something along those lines where you're showing something, or if it's through writing, because you can have a voice through writing. And when you start to have position, you start to have that perspective on the world. And people start to follow you for that perspective. Because as you start to teach, it's not as simple as me just saying, Mike, teach me how to fry an egg. Because the words you're going to pick and choose about frying an egg is going to be the total opposite or different set of words and vocabulary than what I would choose. But you have to take all that information you just gathered, and you have to turn that soup into something that actually tastes good and makes sense so that someone else can have that meal and say, wow, that's who you are as a person. You took all of this stuff. You had to formulate it into the ideas that you're about to share in whatever medium you choose. And through that act of taking what you've learned, your experiences, your personal opinions and beliefs, what people are saying and what you think to be true, and you're turning that into some way, shape, and form of teaching someone else that subject. That middle ground of how you're teaching it and the words you choose, the vocabulary, the semantics, the ways that you're talking about it, like what you and I are doing with this series, is the toughest part. Because now you need to take all of those raw ingredients and you need to hodgepodge it for yourself first. When you can teach yourself all that stuff and you start to turn it into ideas worth sharing, that's where you're teaching. A lot of people skip that middle step of teaching yourself first and finding your own vocabulary and semantics to teach the people at the other end what you learned based on all those sets of things, your experiences, the things you've read, the things you've researched. If you can bridge the gap and find your own way of saying everything you just learned and you take it and you wrap that into a nice present and gift, that's when you have the gift of teaching. And you can get out the other end where someone can read what you just taught, or they can listen to what you just said, or they can watch what you just showed, and walk away from that setting with this bigger idea of clarity. Because at the end of it all, that's what teaching should do for someone else. If someone walks away with, yeah, you know, that just kind of reaffirmed what I thought, that doesn't really help them. If they walk away with clarity, they now can take actionable steps. So that's where I wanted to end that third mini series there, the third mini lesson. I'm curious if you have anything else you want to add before I move on here.
Yeah. So I think the one thing that we didn't really touch on, but I think maybe builds on what you're talking about, and it has helped me in the past, if you are looking to share your ideas or teach other people, is to build in this concept that I saw in a TED talk by Jeff Ponders called Be Better Than Batman. And that probably gives you a sense of where I'm going with this, but it's the idea that he's a person who has a business, and he's also a jazz saxophonist, and he just realized that he could essentially, in his TED talk, he talked about how he Batman as a character, as an iconic character in superhero lore, has two sides to him, right? He has this identity as Bruce Wayne, where he is able to live around the world, you know, be this like billionaire playboy. And then at night he's chasing vigilantes and saving the day and being a hero, right? And the thesis from Jeff's talk was essentially be better than Batman. You don't have to hide away the multiple pieces of yourself, and you are probably more at an advantage to combine things that you find fascinating about your life. So for him, he took this idea of being a saxophonist and being a businessman and started taking skills from one thing and integrating them into another and sharing those ideas in business that he had learned as a saxophonist, you know, and made his business better. So I think if somebody is really trying to understand or teach a subject, it goes back to, like, for me, it's a very interesting point because I really lean into now talking through stories that are relatable to nerd culture, things that I'm interested in, whether that's superheroes or films that I've watched or things like that. I'm trying to take those stories and relate them to an idea or a topic. And for somebody else who's listening to this, it might be, you know, Tim, you've talked a lot about baking and food, and you've related those analogies through your own experiences and then taught those ideas through your own lens. It could be something like food or nerdy stuff, or it could be anything. But I think that there are experiences that are not just directly related to that subject, but related to other things in your life that you could then use as your filter to find your voice. And I just thought that that was something I wanted to add to the way that we're talking about teaching.
Yeah, I love it, because the toughest part is exactly what you're just sharing about, that when you're trying to then take all this information and share it through your lens, having analogies is a really good way of doing it. Because all the things you read and all the things that you research and all of the experiences that you have and are continuing to have probably relate to something else that you're already doing in your life. Only you can identify what that thing is and how you see it. And when you start relating all these different pieces of knowledge together in a way that makes sense universally, you've become someone who can teach that thing. It's about the universal way of speaking. When you read a book in your subject matter, you might actually find that it's, to someone else, a very dry book, a book that no one would ever want to read. But you read it because it's diving so deep and it's what you are curious about. And it's because you know enough of the background to continue to give you the interest and the self-motivation that you need to go through with the curiosity that you have and figure out more about that subject. And you do it because you love it. And then when you take that and you create this universal way of speaking through analogies, through the ways that are true to you, and you regurgitate the information and you repurpose it and you take it and you wrap it up with your own personal experiences, and you share it at the other end to teach someone else, that's when you know you found your voice. That's that moment where a tough idea that if you ask anyone who only plays the game of telephone on social media, if you ask them the question in that particular place, they will stumble. And that's where you have not only your position, but you start to develop an expertise. You start to develop a design thought leadership aspect to yourself. And you start to get to a point where people aren't trusting you because you're saying a lot. It's not about the quantity of words that you've chosen to use. It's actually about the quality of the lessons you're teaching through the selection of the words that you choose to use. And in that moment, you'll find more people following you, not because of only the things you're saying, but because of who you are. The only way they get to who you are is when you find your own voice. And this is the way that I found for it to work. It's to go through these three things that I just talked about in these mini lessons: reading, researching, and educating yourself. Combining that with your experiences. Determining your position and basing it on the research that you've done. Teaching it based on the experience plus what you learned through reading and research. And now, the fourth mini lesson of this series of finding your voice is to always continue that process of researching, learning, gaining experience, and teaching. You have to combine all these things and keep on repeating the cycle, because teaching helps you clarify all of your own thoughts. And through that clarification, you help others. And as you go through this cycle, you get better each time, but you also get deeper and deeper and deeper into that subject matter. And as you do that, you'll find a moment in which you diverge and you start researching other matters. Finding your voice is predicated on having a position on a specific subject matter. Your position is what makes you unique. It's the thing that people begin to remember you for, because it transforms all of the complex ideas of all these different things you're researching and reading and all of your experiences into ones that are shared uniquely through your own voice and the choice of words you're using. Teaching others about the subject is the best way of testing the knowledge that we've accumulated along with our position to continue the process of truly learning more about the subject matter. It's the goal that everyone sets out on: to become a master of something. You might not ever become a master in your own mind, but along the way, people will start to view you as one, because they see that you're continually getting better at the thing you're researching. So it's about that consistency of doing this cycle over and over again. What do you think about that, Mike?
Yeah, I think that goes into a lot of what we've talked about in previous lessons too, with this idea of the practice and being able to return to these ideas over and over again. Two things come to mind. One was this cycle that you talk about, I think, is really poignant, because you might read a book, let's say when you're 20, and go through the cycle and research and figure out your position on it and go through everything that we've been talking about, and 10 years later, read the same book and have a completely different experience with what that text told you. And that's partially because of the experiences you've learned since then, and partially because something that we all deal with, and I'm maybe dealing with a little bit more than you are, Tim, is we lose some of that knowledge over time gradually. We don't remember all of the details that we learned initially, and we have to kind of return to the source, right? We need to re-engage with the things that we might have once known, because honestly, we forget things. We're human beings, and I don't remember everything I've ever read, but I try to go back to certain things. A clear example that is probably something I will return to at least once a year, if not maybe once every other year, is the series that Austin Kleon wrote about Steal Like an Artist and his trilogy that he's had. I will probably return to that a lot, one, because they're easy reads, but also because they're very clear ideas that speak to me as a creative that I want to revisit so that I remind myself and I restore my experience with what those texts said to me in the first place. And I think that those kinds of ideas are very important, because for me, I have had a different read of those books every time I come back to them. I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that thing, but I also have a new position based on the experiences that I've had since then. And I don't know if you've I used to be a reader who just read a book and then put it on my bookshelf and never returned to it. But I don't know if you go back and reread things or if you do that for similar reasons that I just talked about.
Yeah, I find myself generally speaking, every now and then, I'll think back to an idea because I talked to someone about it and I start thinking about it. And I remember, you know, that there's a specific book that I learned it from. Not only do I go back to the book, I flip directly to the section that I remembered. And then I reread the section a few times. A few books that I've done that with is The Dip by Seth Godin, because it just resonates with me all the time. It's this idea that people eventually find that they're either on the right track, but things are starting to just be repetitive and you either continue and get over this dip and find yourself at the peak, or you end up going in the opposite direction and you quit and you say, you know what, this is too repetitive. I actually don't like doing this thing anymore and I quit. And that to me is a book I always return to. And there are others too, but for me, there are books that I reread, and each time I reread it, I take a different lesson from it the next time I read it because of the evolution of my own life. And that's why the continual practice is really important to me.
Yeah, and I think that we just, aside from practicing the ideas and finding our voice, like there are literally just milestones in somebody's life that change them. If you have kids, I don't have kids, but I know that from the friends that I have, the family members that I have, just talking to people who have kids, it completely changes the dynamic in your life. Things like that might seem like they don't actually influence you, but they do. And whether that's getting your first house or getting your first job or, you know, these things, getting a promotion at that job, becoming somebody else in your field that you're in, these milestones create these moments in time that evolve you as a person over the course of your life. And you just might literally have a different position on it based on time. And you might also have a different position on something based on other texts that you've read in that same subject matter. So if I'm researching something related to burnout or gamification or habits, and I read a book at one given time in my life, but then I learn a completely different type of position on that same topic, I might actually have to go back and reread a section or two from that first book to say, is my position really the same anymore? Because now I think that this position might be okay. And I don't really know exactly where I stand. And sometimes I question, just based on those things alone, where I'm going in my own trajectory of my own learning process. And that cycle that you talked about, I hadn't really thought about it before, Tim, but I think the idea of this cycle where you go through, you learn, you talk about something, you create your position, you teach it to somebody else, and then the cycle kind of starts over again, I think is really a powerful image for me personally, because that's how it feels. That's a really good way to put it, because I just feel like I'm constantly in this like hamster wheel almost.
Yeah. And the last thing I'll share about that before I move into the last mini lesson here is that when I think about the experiences that we have in our personal lives, the things that we're doing and all the things we're learning personally by going through the actual trials that we put ourselves through, is that that is the beginning of your position. What becomes your voice is when you combine your position and you put it up against everything else you learn through reading and researching, where you actually start to solidify your voice because it gives you confidence. When you only come at something with your own experiences, you often have less confidence than if you came at it not only with your position, but after you've held it up against all of these different things you've learned from reading and researching. And that in itself becomes a voice that you share because you are more confident about it and you feel as if everything that you're talking about has so much more ground because you've given it the foundation that it needs. So with that, I want to transition to the last mini lesson here, but I'll run through the previous ones real quick just so people know how we got here. The first one in this lesson about finding your voice that I would teach to my younger self. The first mini lesson was to read, research, and educate yourself. The second one was to determine your position and base it on the readings, the research, and your personal experiences. And then teach based on those experiences combined with what you learned through all of that research and reading. As you continue to learn, this is the fourth lesson, remember to do it over and over again and continue it as a cycle. Read, research, learn, and teach. Just keep doing it over and over again, because each time you do it, you'll learn a little bit more about your own voice and your own position, and it might even change over time. It's not about just strengthening. It's about seeing if there's a different perspective that matters. I found that to matter, and I found it to actually change and shift the way that I thought about some things in my life. So the last mini lesson here that I want to jump into, this is the most important one that I'm starting to find now that I'm seeing more people following me on social media and other places. It's to never take your voice for granted. As you begin to teach and share your ideas, it can be tempting to hear yourself speaking. As tempting as it is, don't let it take away from consistently learning and creating space for others to challenge your ideas. It's in these challenges where we get to grow and develop a stronger position. The reason why I wanted to share this one is because everyone loves to hear themselves speak. The more you speak, the more you feel like you walk away from a discussion with this idea that it was a great discussion. If you ever watch a discussion happening between two people where one person asks a bunch of questions and a second person answers, and their answers are long-winded, and that discussion ends, and you ask that person how they felt, they'll always tell you that they felt like it was a great discussion. But it wasn't a discussion because they were the only ones speaking. I find that that happens all the time. So as you start to share your voice and you start to have that following of people who love what you have to say because you're continually learning how to better yourself, how to develop a stronger, more refined vision of all the things you're about, and you can teach it through all the things that you're saying because you found your voice, don't take it for granted. Make space for other people to share their thoughts and to ask you questions and challenge your ideas. Mike, I feel like you and I have been podcasting for a long time, and there are definitely people that I found on social media in rooms with you and I where they'll jump up and ask questions to you because they know about you through your blog. They know about you through conferences you've spoken at. And they always ask you questions. Do you think that in the future, as you continue to speak, as you continue to write, and you continue to do all these things, what do you think about this last tip here about never taking your voice for granted?
Yeah, it's a weird switch that happens. I don't consider myself internet famous or anything like that, but I do feel like certain people know me a little bit better because of things that I've shared or putting myself out there, whether it's through this podcast, whether it's through the blog, whether it's through speaking publicly. And I've put myself in that position through the practice of doing so. And I think initially, when I noticed that switch started to happen, it became sort of like you said, like it became kind of like an addiction or a drug to keep talking and keep speaking and keep putting stuff out there and not really listening as much. So like in the first year after I started writing, I remember distinctly feeling sort of like I was this is going to sound bad, but it made me feel a little bit more arrogant or like better than, and that I was teaching stuff. I was sort of a little bit more popular than I had been ever really. Just like in our profession. And I got full of myself a little bit, and I'm, you know, not happy to admit that, but it kind of feeds into what you were talking about, where I do love hearing myself speak, and I am just a naturally long-winded person anyway. So those two things combined, and then getting a little bit more popular online, you know, didn't really help me very much in some ways. And I think that what I've learned about myself over time, and something that I would actually suggest or recommend to people who are trying to kind of keep themselves in check, is, you know, you have helped me specifically, Tim, kind of call me out here and there, or at least helped critique the way that I speak. So that I think even from the beginning of when we had been podcasting till now, and especially I think we've both exponentially helped each other speak better in the recent months, I think that there is something to be said about finding somebody who is maybe not directly in the room with you all the time, but helping you refine the way that you talk. Because for you and I, you've been going through similar types of experiences where people know you because of your YouTube channel now. People know you for designing things and sharing them on Instagram. And I don't know if you've had the same experience where you have to kind of put yourself in check, but I find that for me, it's a very interesting line to walk where I still want to provide value. I still want to share my story and still want to teach people, but I do have to be cognizant of the fact that I can talk too much, or I might just be doing what we were talking about earlier and starting to imitate people. And I don't want to do that. So I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but I feel like you're probably dealing with some similar things yourself.
Yeah. The biggest one that I started dealing with is on the platform called Clubhouse, where I started an interview series where I would bring in architects and designers, and I would interview them about their past, their present, and their future. It was all about this idea of learning about their journey, of how they got to where they are. And all of the people that I've invited to be a guest have gotten to a point in their careers, in their lives, where they are doing something different and unique. These are not the architects and designers you often think about. They're not the big names, the stars, the famous people the magazines talk about and that have books published and all that. They're actually the people taking their professions in a different way. People who became YouTube famous or are on their way of getting there. People who work at some of those big places, but are also thinking about starting something of their own. And people who have worked as a director on projects for companies like Apple and companies like Best Buy and all of these places that you think about. And as I got through this interview series, people were so interested in how I got these people on. And instead of asking how I got them on, they associated me with being on this high level with all these people. They put me on this pedestal alongside everyone else, to the point where if I invite somebody to come speak and they know who was on before them, and they know who the previous lineup was, they are intimidated by me, not by all the people who were on before, but by me. And it's at the point where sometimes I know that if I ask some questions, that they're so intimidated by the fact that I had these guests on before and that I had that clout, that they now are nervous on stage. And these are people, mind you, with hundreds of thousands of subscribers, followers, all of that. They are nervous. And that's where I started to notice that, to me, the ways that I'm curating the things that I'm talking about and all of the ideas that I have, all of the information that I'm sharing, all of the things that I'm surrounding myself with is based on my voice. It's based on the ideas that I want to share. And through that, I knew that I had to take a step back And instead of jumping into interviews, I now meet ahead of time and I let people know that they should be comfortable. And I explain how. I walk them through the steps and I say, look, this is just a discussion between you and I. Doesn't matter who else is listening. Doesn't matter who else is out there. It's a discussion between us as people. It's not you as an expert. It's not me as an expert. It's just us. And we walk through it and we discuss things. But what I bring to the table that nobody understands or thinks about, that I'm starting to understand, is that I guide the conversation. And through that, I need to be able to guide the people who are with me. So when it comes to this idea of never taking my voice for granted, it taught me that people are seeing me a certain way. Their perspective of me is a certain way. And it's all shaped by me sharing my voice, which is authentically me. It's everything that I'm about. I'm not putting anything in there that is false to me. And the one thing that I have to say about it too is that I inject my own sense of humor. Mike likes to say it's self-deprecating because it probably is, but because of the self-deprecating sense of humor, it honestly opens up the people who are intimidated by me to now join the conversation because they see that I'm a human too. And that's the whole point of never taking your voice for granted. That, yeah, people will put you on a pedestal. And if you like being up there, then be up there. But the moment you start taking your voice for granted is the moment where people just become listeners and they stop being participants. And I want people around me to know that they can participate and join the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I think that in general, we both have experienced this in different ways. And I feel like in some ways, you just need to kind of put yourself out there. You know, it goes back to the original topics that we were talking about with researching and educating yourself. And then there has to be this moment where you do put yourself out there and talk about something. And you might not know exactly what your position is and you're trying to refine it and you're trying to figure it all out. But I think if I asked you, Tim, and you can admit this or not, or describe how you felt about it. But, you know, if I asked you when you started, do you think that this is going to take off? You know, I don't know if you necessarily would have said yes or no one way or the other for the interview series that you did. I think you may have even surprised yourself a little bit with the ways in which it evolved in the over the several weeks that you did it, where, you know, I noticed in you, your voice, it wasn't necessarily even about finding a specific voice for yourself. But your kind of superpower that I think you've identified for yourself, at least from my perspective, is that you have this ability to almost coax that voice out of other people and help them find that as well, which is part of that process, though. It's having those conversations. It's about, like, I know that because I've talked to you before, you know, and I know that you do that for me when we have conversations. But I think, I guess I just want to ask you, did you find that you found that for yourself through this process or through, you know, having these interviews and having these discussions?
I found it prior to that. When I first graduated from university, I actually started teaching at a graduate level and I was teaching graduate studio courses while I was working full time. And at that time, I realized that even though I wasn't so far from the students that I was teaching, they looked up to me in this way of, wow, this person's so young. He must be so talented. He must be this. He must be that. And so when they talked to me, there was this filter that they were putting everything through to the point where some of them were not being themselves or not asking the appropriate question because they were trying to use bigger words than that they actually didn't know the answers to. They were trying to fill the air with words to make them seem smart or to make them seem like they were on a higher level when compared to their peers. And at that moment, I realized that comparison happens to everyone in every setting unconsciously. So in that moment, I realized that for me to actually teach and to be able to do it in a way where people are actually gaining something from me, I needed to bring myself to their level so that they can talk to me in their own authentic way, so that they can share something from their unique perspective, and we can actually talk about the design of their project from the actual place that it stems from. And it's the comprehensive ideas that they have in their minds from all the years of their experience living their life, from all the years that they've been in the educational system, and from any or every actual career professional setting they've been in. And when you start to get to that level where they can talk to you as a person about ideas and talk to you as a person about all these things that they've learned and that they personally believe in, you get to the heart of who they are, and they believe in their own project. They believe in themselves, and they develop the confidence. And to me, it's never been about me having confidence, because I find my confidence when I'm on a stage or when I'm in a discussion with someone else who is confident. Because then it's not about who's bigger than who. It's not about who knows more than the other. It's more so about sharing ideas and pushing each other to grow. And that to me is what I apply to this interview series. I enter it and it's about creating a comfortable space where the other person isn't looking at me for who I am, but they're looking at themselves for who they are and what they have to share. And in that inflection, you find that even though by the end of that discussion, they've shared so much wisdom that people walk away and send me private messages thanking me for that interview series, and they send them the same messages, that at the end of it all, they still feel the need to ask me, "Hey, Tim, how did I do? I hope I did well." And the only thing I can tell them is, "You did great, because everything you shared was true to you." And that is what always catches people off guard. That is what I want from the interview series. And everyone only wants to know if they did well or not. So I don't know what you think about that, Mike.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. And honestly, it's a really great place to kind of wrap everything up on. I think that overall, we've talked a lot about how to do things for ourselves in terms of finding our voice. But I think it's just as important for you as part of, like, let's say you're not the person who's talking and you're the person who's in that discussion or trying to be a part of the conversation. I think that each of us has a responsibility that's as equally important to a degree, call each other out on stuff, and also, but not in like a belligerent way, but more just in a way that helps the other person thrive and helps the other person grow. You know, I think going back to what I was talking about before, like, you've helped me personally adapt and evolve my own voice. And I think that trying to be that person for other people, you know, it's like paying it forward. I would want to be that person for other people in my life. And even though it can sometimes be an uncomfortable conversation to have, like, "Hey, if you just thought about it this way," or, and it's not about giving advice, it's more about being open with somebody about, let's say, how they talk about something, or maybe just asking them a question that then prompts them to recognize that maybe they were talking too much about nothing or what have you. And I found that those conversations, while they can be a little bit harsh at first, almost help me grow more in some ways, because they help me recognize that I wasn't either really aware of what my knowledge level was of a subject, and maybe I needed to learn more before I put a position out there into the world, or things like that, where I think we can each be that person for somebody else. And it doesn't have to be this aggressive sort of confrontational thing, but just to help, you know, we're all trying to grow here as people. We're all trying to be better. We're all trying to share our ideas. But I feel like there's a context and a framework we can put around these discussions to, so that everybody leaves with something that's more than just, as we've talked about, more than just surface level.
Yeah. And to wrap this all up and to end this particular episode here, I just wanted to talk about this topic today because whenever I think back to my younger self and I think about the biggest questions that I'm hearing people consistently asking, it all comes down to imposter syndrome. It comes back to speaking confidently. And it always comes to this idea of people wanting to find their voice and speak authentically. Everyone talks about these broad terms, but no one actually talks about potential ways of finding your voice. So through this, I'm hoping people were able to at least see some way of identifying things that they care about, positioning themselves, and having the confidence to then share it and to have open discussions about it. If you learned anything from this episode today, make sure you share it on Twitter and tag us and help us get all of this information out there for other people who can use it. Next week, we're going to be talking about Mike's next lesson to his younger self, which is leaning into who you are. So make sure you join us then. And thank you all so much for joining us today.
Thanks, guys.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to another episode of Unpacking Design. Check us out anytime at unpackingdesign.com.
And you can also find us on iTunes and anywhere else that you listen to podcasts. Please remember to leave a review and share this podcast with someone you know.